Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 23, 2014, or the Zift 25, 2018, we will start our first service on this preparation day with a song entitled, I Come to the Garden Alone, while the dew is still on the roses. I come to the garden alone while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of Yah is closing, and he walks with me and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other does ever know. He speaks and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that he gave to me, within my heart is ringing, and he walks with me and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. I stay in the garden with him, though the night around me be falling, but he bids me go to the voice of love, his voice to me is calling. And he walks with me and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other had ever known. Hello everyone, once again this is Elijah David. We're going to do this 144,000. Again, we've done it before. It's from the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1 of V.T. Harlow. We're going to start with page 1 on the subject. And we're going to start with the introduction. Let's read our prayer thought, starting with... it says, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of the iron, and her child was called up unto Elohim and unto his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of Elohim, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Now, the wilderness is a place outside of the vineyard. Any place outside of the vineyard is counted for the wilderness. Now, the red dragon in Revelation 17 came up in the wilderness. Was seen in the wilderness. And the wilderness of the people here in the United States is where this here red dragon represents the scarlet-colored beast here in the 12th hour, also connected with Mystery Babylon, the woman that rides this beast in Revelation 17. And Revelation 13, it talks about this beast coming up in the earth in Revelation 13, or in the wilderness. Said the little two-horned beast, he came up in the earth, represents our government, and the scarlet-colored beast came up in the wilderness of the people. So anyway, it says that in Revelation 12:5, and she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was called up unto Elohim and unto his throne. Okay, now, we had repeated this in our day. We've already had repeated this nation, this woman giving birth to a man-child, Yahshua. We have his prophecy there in Isaiah. And where unto us a child is born, a man-child. Okay, it says that when Yahshua came to visit his house in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, on the Passover, he came to the church over the house, and he looked in on it, and he made some changes. He changed the guard from the old guard to the new guard, the house of David, and then he went back to heaven. Okay, so the woman appeared a second time in our day and was in pain to deliver. Deliver who? To deliver the 144,000, Daniel 12:1. Okay, let's go on. Verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of Elohim, and that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angel, and prevailed not. Neither was there a place found any more in heaven. Okay, now it says, and the great dragon that was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Well, we know that came after Yahshua resurrected and went back to heaven, according to John 12, I believe, 31, 32. When Yahshua resurrected, he said, now the judgment of this world, now shall the Satan be cast out. And so Yahshua went back to heaven, and Revelation 9 records this battle that took place at the gate of the city, I guess. And Satan was not allowed to enter into the city. And he was cast out of heaven. Okay, now it says in Revelation 12:7, and there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angel, and prevailed not. Neither was there a place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in the heaven, now has come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of Elohim, and the power of his Messiah, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our Elohim day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And unto the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and a half a time, from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Elohim, and have the testimony of the Yahshua Messiah. Okay, end of our prayer thought. Let's go right on into now. Our topic, the 144,000, we're taking from the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1. And it is the intention of this book to reveal the truth of the 144,000 mentioned in Revelation 7. But the chief object of this publication is to bring about a reformation among Elohim's people, for the truth herein contained is divided into seven sections, giving proof from seven different angles to prevent any doubt or confusion. For this subject is made clear by the use of the Bible and the writings given by the Spirit of Prophecy, for the truth revealed here is of the great importance to the church just now because of the foretold danger which Elohim's people are soon to meet. It calls for the decided action on the part of the believers to separate themselves from all worldlings and worldliness, to anchor themselves to the solid rock by obedience unto all the truth known unto this denomination. If we must escape the great ruin, the Yahshua's voice crieth unto the city, and the man of wisdom shall see thy name, hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed. Okay, that's a comment by the author. Now we're going to go into the introduction of this subject. This publication contains only one main subject with a double lesson, namely the 144,000 and a call for the Reformation. For the object in view is to prepare Elohim's people for the impending doom of Ezekiel's prophecy, chapter 9. There is no new doctrine taught, neither does it condemn the one we have, for the wonderful light between these pages shines upon a large number of the scriptures which we have had no understanding of hitherto. For the interpretation of these scriptures is supported entirely by the writings of Sister E.G. White, that is termed the Spirit of Prophecy. For this publication does not advocate a new movement, and it absolutely opposes such moves. It brings out a positive proof, which cannot be contradicted, that the Seventh-day Adventist Church had been used by Elohim to carry on his work since 1844. Now here V.T. Hodoff is talking about, he is not advocating a new movement, because he knows that the Shepherd's Rod was not a new movement. He knows it is a continuation of the Seventh-day Adventist, because it's a part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that's why he said what he did. But yet, people come along, and Brother Johnson comes along, and he says, well, there's been three movements. The Adventist movement, the Shepherd's Rod movement, and now the Isaac Branch movement. But on the other hand, V.T. Hodoff, he wrote in White House Recruiter, he said that the Seventh-day Adventist Church was that fourth group of laborers called at the ninth hour in 1844, and he's saying that he was that fifth group of laborers called in Matthew 20, verse 6. So he was showing right there that he was a new movement from the Adventist movement by saying that he was the number five group of laborers, which comes in the 12th hour, which we are. The House of David is your fifth group of laborers, but V.T. Hodoff was making that claim in 1930. Yet he said, we're not advocating a new movement, but on the other hand, that's all you could say. if you're saying that you're the fifth group and the Adventists are the fourth group of laborers, point out in Matthew 20 verse 5, and then the fifth group is pointed out in Matthew 20 verse 6. So you see, Vicky Hardiff, he didn't understand all the parables and all at once. And that's the reason why he'd make a statement like he did. Well, this is no new movement. We're not advocating no new movement. But on the other hand, that's what he was teaching, that he was a new movement. this subject of the Revelation 7 is doubtless the most frequently discussed Bible subject by the Seventh-day Adventist and other Bible students in any other Bible truth. So this is the first page on the subject of the 144,000 taken from the Shepherd Rod Volume 1. And this will be part one of the 144,000. He says, many theories have been advanced by the denomination, but not one has stood the test without the contradiction. Great men of both biblical and secular knowledge have diligently searched the Bible and have proved nothing as to who this company is. While reading the Great Controversy, page 397, the spirit of the error will lead us from the truth, and the spirit of the Elohim will lead us into the truth. But say ye, a man may be in an error and think he has the truth. What then? We answer, the spirit and the word agree. The man judges himself by the word of the Elohim and find a perfect harmony through the whole word, then he must believe he has the truth. But if he finds the spirit by which he is led does not harmonize with the whole tenor of the Elohim's law or book, then let him walk carefully, lest he be caught in the snare of the devil. Sister E.G. White was doubtless far more acquainted with this subject than anyone living at this time, for she wrote much about them and had visions of them. There is no doubt that she too spent much time in the searching both from the Bible and her own writing, but she has failed to point out the exact company by assembling the references together and clear the mystery. The question is, why have all these righteous people who earnestly search for the truth fail to produce any evidence as to who this wonderful company really is? For the answer we give is, because it was not present truth in their time. And believe it or not, the 144,000 was not present truth in V.T. Hollis' time, other than to continue on his investigation and for the continual learning as much as he could about it along the way. For Ellen G. White started that in 1844. Was her first vision of 144,000. And so, but it was an ongoing thing, and I can understand this Adventist being preoccupied with that subject of the 144,000. But to try to make them to appear in your time, when you didn't have full disclosure and understanding of the unfolding of the prophecies on the subject. And so that's where the fallacy come in at for everyone. They all, everyone. V.T. Hollis, Ben Roden, Rutus Johnson. And whenever I separated from Rutus Johnson in 2003, I was told to go and understand the parable of Matthew 20 about the five groups of labor. And so that's where we've gotten a lot of stuff straightened out. All right, it goes on to say, Sister White could have given a theory of some kind far more fitting and correct than any other theory ever advanced. She used wisdom and good judgment in leaving out her own opinion. Elohim will make these things known at the appointed time. Only men may be made to believe a thing for a while, but except it be the truth, it cannot last. Thus it would be unwise and a waste of time for one to try to tell who the 144,000 are until the scroll has made a turn and one truth reveals another. If this study would unmask the mystery and harmonize with the scriptures, the spirit of prophecy, then we must conclude that Elohim's appointed time for this subject has come. Sister White had received inspiration on this subject, but just like the Daniel, was not permitted to know who, how, and when made until Elohim's appointed time. For the following is a quotation made by her unto Elder E.E. Andros. I feel confident, Elder Andros, that the brethren in Southern California will find a blessing in the reviewing of the teachings of the scriptures concerning the 144,000 and bringing to bear upon these teachings whatever of the light there may be in the published writings of the Spirit of Prophecy, and as prayerfully consideration is given the matter in all its bearings, I believe that the Elohim will make the truth sufficiently clear to make possible the avoidance of the needless and unprofitable questions not vital to the salvation of the precious souls. Okay, let's go now. It says, matters not so long as one does right. This is a question mark. It has been said by some that it matters not whether one understands the subject of the 144,000 or not so long as he does right. This is certainly true if we do right, but how do we know whether we do right or not, except we understand Bible doctrines? How can we know whether we keep the right Sabbath or belong to the right church unless we understand that doctrine? Why is it important to understand Daniel 7, the beast and his image, and many other Bible prophecies if we do not understand the subject of the 144,000? We may not be sealed, for it would be worthless to understand it after the sealing, just as it would be of no value to understand the beast and his image after his work on earth is finished. For the angel's message of Revelation 7, the angel ascending from the east, is as important as the first, second, and third angel's messages of Revelation 14, 6 to 11. It must be understood and given to the people at the right time, as also the mighty angel of Revelation 18:1, for the loud cry must come at a given time. This angel of Revelation 7 cannot be the third angel, for John's explanation of them different. For the three angels of Revelation 14 are flying in the midst of the heaven, or where the sun stands at the noon, but the one of Revelation 7 is ascending from the east, or the rising of the sun. The message of this angel has never been understood at any time, nor proclaimed by this denomination or any other people, and only theories have been advanced. It is evident that this truth, as other truths, must come at the right time. Okay, well, we know that the 10th hour is not the right time. That's when this article was written. V.T. Holliff, and we know that the right time is in the 12th hour, and it's still right here in front of us. Okay, the next subtitle is Meaning of the 7 years of Plenty and 7 years of Famine Found Only One Way. When the perplexing subject is made clear, then we must believe that the time is here. But this, as all Bible truth, is found only. Our next subtitle now is The Meaning of 7 years of Plenty and 7 years of Famine Found Only One Way. When the perplexing subject is made clear, then we must believe that the time is here. But this, as all Bible truth, is found only one way and in the one place, namely the storehouse, the Bible. Bear in mind that as Joseph of the ancient days controlled the storehouse, even so Yahshua controls the scriptures and the time. Many righteous men in the past went to Yahshua Joseph and got all the present truth corn for that particular time that they could assimilate, while he, Yahshua, is liberal. He is also careful and therefore has nothing to waste. When Joseph gathered the corn in Egypt and stored it in the storehouses, he did it not for the wealth, but to sustain life in the next 7 years of the famine. For the corn was a symbol of the Yahshua's word, as we shall endeavor to prove. Well, the reasons for the believing that the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine and the days of Joseph and the ancient Egypt represent the world's history in the two sections of time are as follows. In volume 3, page 369, we read, Isaac was a figure of the son of the Yahweh, who was offered a sacrifice for the sin of the world. Okay. In other words, it says Isaac was a figure of the son of the Yahweh, who was offered as a sacrifice for the sin of the world. Again, we read in Desire of Ages, page 112, and in the ram, divinely provided in the place of the Isaac, Abraham saw a symbol of him who was to die for the sins of men. Thus Isaac and the ram are symbols of Yahshua's submission, death, and sacrifice. Of Jonah we read in the Desire of Ages, page 406. As Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale, Yahshua was to be the same time in the heart of the earth. And as the preaching of Jonah was a sign unto the Ninevites, so Yahshua's preaching was a sign unto his generation. See also Prophets and Kings, page 274. Elisha was a symbol of the Yahshua, Prophets and Kings, page 240. Like the Savior of mankind of whom he was a type, Elisha in his ministry among men combined the work of the healing with that of the teaching. These are the reasons why Isaac, Jonah, and Elisha are types of Yahshua, sure, representing the different phases and import of the work of the Yahshua. Of Joseph, we read in Patriarchs and Prophets, page 369, Joseph was a representative of the Yahshua, and their benefactor unto whom all Egypt turned with gratitude and praise, that heathen people were to behold the love of their Creator and Redeemer. Egypt was an idolatrous nation and is a symbol of the world in sin. Joseph was a type of Yahshua, the sovereign of the world. As Joseph was sent into Egypt to preserve life, just so Yahshua was sent into the world, Egypt, to preserve life. Quoting from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 231, we read, And Elohim sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your life by a great deliverance. Thus it is written that these deliverances were an object lesson of the spiritual blessing. But how did Joseph bless the ancient world? Was it not by the corn he preserved in the 7 years of plenty? Had it not been for the immense storehouses full of the life-giving energy, what blessing could Joseph have been unto the ancient world were it not for his Elohim given wisdom to gather the corn with which to feed the world in the time of its great need? For the corn which Joseph preserved is a blessing as it is written. The corn represents spiritual blessing, the word of Elohim. Elohim's word is the spiritual bread, and men have lived on it. Okay. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat that thou findest, and eat this roll, and go speak unto the house of Israel. Ezekiel 3:1. The words were found, and I did eat them, and thy word was unto me the joy and rejoicing of mine heart. For I am called by thy name, O Yahweh Elohim of hosts, Jeremiah 15:16, and had rained down manna upon them to eat, and had given them of the corn of heaven. Psalm 78:24. How fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, He gave them bread torn from heaven to eat. Then Yahshua said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. John 6:31-32. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. Revelation 2:17. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. Revelation 10:10. Well, the latter prophecy has been applied to William Miller after he had studied the book of Daniel and accepted his teaching. Symbolically speaking, he ate the little book, which became a part of him and his co-workers. Had this not been true, he would not have proclaimed the message with such enthusiasm as he did. As the expected event failed to transpire in 1844, unto them it was a bitter experience, thus fulfilling the scriptures that men have eaten the word of Elohim. If the coin does not represent the word as in the Bible, then the question may be asked, of what is Joseph a type? Isaac and Jonah and Elisha each represent a certain phase of Yahshua's work. And if Joseph represents Yahshua, the food gathered, the word, the storehouse, the Bible, then the 7 years of plenty, during which the time the food was gathered, must be a symbol. Otherwise, the picture could not be perfect. And if the years of the plenty are a type, then the years of famine must be taken into consideration. Each of these two sections of the time bear the number 7, meaning perfect, fullness of time, entire, or all of the time. So the symbol can represent only one thing, and that is the world's history in two great divisions of the time, namely B.C. and A.D., with the cross, Yahshua, the dividing line, for all the prophets and the law prophesied until John. It is for this reason Yahshua made the statement, "For we have no other thus far." For the years of the plenty is B.C., in which time Elohim gave plenty to supply the world's need. For the years of the famine, the New Testament time, A.D. As Joseph gathered the corn into the storehouses by his servant, the Egyptians, just so Yahshua gathered the word of Elohim, the spiritual food, in the Bible, the storehouse, by his servants, the prophets. Elohim, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the world. Hebrews 1:1. Okay, and 2. Had it not been for this purpose, then we ask, what could it have been for? Elohim, who was responsible for the event, did it not to bring hardship unto his subjects, or to starve the world, as the famine was not in Egypt only, for we read, and the famine was over all the face of the earth. Genesis 41:56. Had this not been the symbol, okay, it says, why would Elohim have brought the famine over all the earth? Some people may have difficulty in being convinced, and others can never be convinced, that the harmony of the lesson can hardly be questioned. If the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine are not a type of the world's history, as Joseph, he meant storehouses, not a type of the Bible, and the corn gathered in the 7 years of plenty, not a type of the word in the Bible, for the feeding of the world, not a type of the New Testament time, consuming the scriptures, gathered in the Old Testament time, then we ask, where are the types for all of these events? Has not Elohim given the gospel in types, that is, the plan of salvation, in types as well as in the prophecy? For Yahshua was the foundation of the Jewish economy. For the whole system of the types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption. Actually, the Apostles, page 14. If the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine did not represent the world's history, the coincidence, as well shall endeavor to bring forth, could hardly have been possible by an accident. For the Yahshua said, gather up the crumbs, that there be no waste. it was his word that multiplied the loaves and fishes. These crumbs represent the very words he spoke. We read the following in volume 2, page 606. I am authorized from the Elohim to tell you that another ray of light through the testimony will not shine upon your pathway until you make a use of the light already given. But now we must have corn or else we shall die. As a people, we have much boasted that we have all the truth, but such a statement cannot be found between the pages of the Spirit of Prophecy. Not another ray of light will shine upon your path until you make a practical use of the light already given. These words suggest that there is more light to shine and light in the truth. Again, quoting from the Testimonies of Ministries, page 107, no one should claim that he has all the light there is to the Elohim's people, for the Yahweh will not tolerate this. He has said, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. Even if all our leading men should refuse light and truth, that door will still remain open, for the Yahweh will raise men up who will give the people the message for this time. 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. This is our next subtitle. For the 7 years of plenty and 7 years of the famine in the days of the Joseph and the ancient Egypt represents the world's history in two sections of the time, as previously explained, namely B.C. and A.D. Each one of these sections bears a biblical number 7, meaning complete. The 7 years of plenty is B.C. Though one may doubt the application made here, the lesson we receive from it is true. In the Old Testament time, Elohim gave plenty through his prophets, and Yahshua, Joseph stored it in the storehouse Bible, but as we have no record that there was any of the corn left, and the 7 years of famine had passed, neither was there any shortage. Therefore, it is plain that all the scriptures are to be understood, used up before the second coming of Yahshua. For the Pharaoh's dream, recorded in Genesis 41:17-20, reads as follows. In my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river 7 kine, fat-fleshed and well-favored. And they fed in a meadow, and behold, 7 other kine came up after them, poor, and very ill-favored and lean-fleshed, such as I've never saw in all the land of Egypt. For the badness and the lean and the ill-favored kind did eat up the first 7 fat kind. Note that the 7 lean and ill-favored kind did eat the fat flesh kind. By reading Genesis 41:21, we find the 7 lean kind did not put on flesh after consuming the 7 fat kind, which indicates that there will be no scriptures in reserve, but that all will be brought unto the light. For the thought is that the 7 years A.D. will consume all the corn, word, and the 7 years B.C. as represented also by the ears of the corn in Genesis 41:22-24. Is this not clear that all the writings in the Old Testament will be fulfilled and understood before the end of the A.D. The second coming of Yahshua, but it is it not true that the biggest part or portion is not yet understood? How can one say that he has all the truth and does not and cannot explain a large portion of the Bible? Shall we pray to Elohim to open our eyes that we may see and arise from this latency and lethargy into which we have fallen? Who are the 144,000? That's with a question mark. Well, the subject is, who are the 144,000? First mention of this number in the Bible is in Revelation 7:4. I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 for the tithe of the children of the Israel. Revelation 7:2. And I saw another angel ascend from the east, having the seal of the living Elohim, and he cried with a loud voice unto the four angels unto whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea. Note that this angel is ascending and not descending. In contrast to this, Revelation 18:1 said, and after these things I saw another angel come down from the heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. For this mighty angel is not ascending, descending, nor coming, but is already come. If the angel made the trip from heaven to earth in less than 15 minutes and answered the prayer, Daniel 9:4-23, while it takes light millions of years to travel part of the distance, we can easily understand why the expression "but come" is used, meaning suddenly appearing without warning. For this angel is the loud cry angel of Revelation 18:1, that is, to lighten the whole earth with his glory in this 12th hour that we're in now. V.T. Hoff writing this about 80-some years ago, he was teaching and telling the people that at that time, that if they were in the 11th hour, which was the last hour to him, and that they were given the loud cry angel's message, Revelation 18:1, that he had the Revelation 18:1 angel, and he had the fifth angel. Okay. And all the time, he's back here explaining the fourth angel with the seal for the 144,000. And he's also believing that he's got the fifth angel. And I do believe the fourth and fifth angel was disclosed to him. All right. It was disclosed to Ellen White and the Adventist in 1888 when Jones and Wagner came down. When that angel came down with Jones and Wagner at the conference, or the Adventist conference, they said that the Sister White said that they had the message of righteousness by faith, and said it was the 18:1 angel. Okay, so that angel came down and announced himself in 1888 and 1890. So no wonder V.T. Hoff believed that it had come back and that he had that angel. Okay, let's go on now. This angel is the loud cry angel, in addition unto the third angel, and the message of the fall of Babylon as given by the second angel is repeated. As foretold in the 18th chapter of Revelation, the people of Elohim are thus prepared to stand in the hour of the temptation which they are soon to meet. That's found early right in page 277. And then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend onto the earth, to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto his message. The great power and glory was imparted unto the angel, and as he descended, the earth was lightened with his glory. The light which attended this angel penetrated everywhere, as he cried mightily with a strong voice, Babylon is fallen. And has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For the message of the fall of Babylon as given by the second angel is repeated with the additional mention of the corruptions which have been entering the churches since 1844. For the work of this angel comes in at the right time to join in the last great work of the third angel's message as it swells into a loud cry. And the people of Elohim are thus prepared to stand in the hour of the temptation, which they are soon to meet. I saw a great light resting upon them, and they united to fearlessly proclaim the third angel's message. This message seemed to be in addition to the third message, joining it as the midnight cry joined the second angel's message in 1844. Of the three angels of Revelation 14:6-11, John writes, and I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, and the third angel followed them. These angels following each other were seen flying in the midst of the heaven, where the sun would be at the midday in its full strength. There is a difference between these angels and the ones in Revelation 7 and Revelation 18:1. These angels are neither ascending nor come, but continue to fly in the midst of heaven. For the meaning is that these angels' messages are not as powerful as the one of Revelation 18:1. For John says he saw the angel come, and that is stand upon the earth. The angel mentioned here is nearby, but the other three angels are at a distance. For this symbol shows that they could not be as powerful as the one that is close by, but these three angels are flying and continue to fly. So the meaning is that while they are not as powerful, they continue a long time until the other angel of the Revelation 18:1 joins in with them, as it has been with the first, second, and third angel's messages until now. We go back to the angel of Revelation 7, the one in which we are most interested at this present time. For this particular angel is ascending from the east. Ascending here could not mean departing or flying away, but simply coming or advancing. For example, in the morning while the sun is rising or ascending and temperature gains in heat as it nears midday, just so with the this angel, that is the sea of 144,000, the angel has was seen coming, but he is taking his time, for the sealing cannot begin until after he arrived, for the seal of the living Elohim is in his possession. If we can locate the time when he arrives, we may know the beginning of the sealing time of the 144,000. And we know when he arrived. He arrived in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, starting at the Passover. Did we know? Because the sealing angel is Yahshua. Did we know that the time when the first, second, and third angel's message began? Our answer is yes. There is no reason for not knowing the definite time when this angel of the Revelation 7 arrived. If we did not know the time, we would have no message. And if Satan can deceive us from the present truth, he has won with his deceptive power. John's prophecy in the Revelation 7 of this ascending angel was only a vision of the something to come, and the fulfillment of this prophecy was realized when Sister White was given her first vision in 1844, which was a vision of the 144,000. Read early writings, page 13-20. John prophesied of this movement and the scene of the angel ascending in the east, for the John's vision became a reality in 1844, but the angel is in the east, and we must await his arrival, for when he arrives, the sealing begins. Do the 144,000 ever die? This is a question mark. For the living saints, 144,000 in the number, we must not conclude that only a part of the whole can constitute the number and yet be true. For the statement made by the inspiration cannot be contradicted, for it reads, 144,000 in number. When a mention is made of this company, it is at the same time when Elohim makes known the day and the hour of the Yahshua's coming. If we can locate at what time of the world's history Elohim speaks the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming, then we may know more about this company. Quoting early writings, page 285, that there was one clear place of silver glory whence came the voice of Elohim like the many waters, shaking the heavens and the earth. There was a mighty earthquake. The graves were open, and those who had died in the faith under the third angel's message, keeping the Sabbath, came forth, and as Elohim spoke the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming and delivered the everlasting covenant unto his people. One may here suppose that the risen and the living make the number, but we do not believe that the spirit of prophecy would call both companies, the living and the resurrected, living saints, for the 144,000 are living saints. The others resurrected Sabbath keepers to make it positive. Another reference is given, found in Great Controversy, page 637. Great hailstones, everyone about the weight of a ton, are doing their work of destruction, for the proudest cities of the earth are laid low. Graves are open, and many of them asleep in the dust of the earth awake, some to everlasting life, and sons of shame and everlasting contempt. All who have died in the face of the third angel's message come forth from the tomb glorified to hear Elohim's covenant of peace with those who have kept his law. This makes it positive that the resurrected Sabbath keepers come forth in the special resurrection of the Daniel 12. This is a time when the great hailstones are doing their destructive work, the seventh plague, and the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men blasphemed Elohim because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceedingly great. Revelation 16, 17, and 21. For the resurrected Sabbath keepers did not live during the time of the plague, for they were resurrected at the time of the seventh plague, so that they hear the announcement of the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming. Well, I don't agree with that. All of the living saints, both living and dead, are to be resurrected before any of the plagues start to, what they call the seven last plagues start to fall. They're all resurrected, and then the wicked are destroyed after that. And most of them, a lot of them are destroyed by the plagues. Okay, if evidence can be brought to view that the 144,000 in number lived before the seventh plague, then we have positive proof that the 144,000 never died. Great Controversy 649. And they sang a new song before the throne, a song which no man can learn to save the 144,000. It is a song of Moses and the Lamb, a song of deliverance. None but the 144,000 can learn that song, for it is a song of their experience. An experience such as no other company have ever had. They have seen the earth wasted with famine and pestilence, the sun having power to scorch men with great heat, and they themselves have endured suffering, hunger, and thirst. Here is a positive statement that the 144,000 lived in the time of the fourth plague, for the sun having power to scorch men with the great heat, and the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with the fire, Revelation 16:8. This is the fourth plague. How could they, 144,000, go through the fourth plague if the special resurrection of the Sabbath keepers, those who died under the third angel's message, did not take place until about the end of the seventh plague? If they have seen the earth wasted with the famine and pestilence, and they themselves have suffered hunger and thirst, they must have lived through all the plague. Again, they sang a new song, which no man can learn, save the 144,000, for it is a song of their experience, an experience such as no other company have ever had. How can it be possible for all to sing the same song, if it is a song of their experience, except they all have the same experience? Those who had been in the grave will have the experience of death, grave, resurrection, and receiving a new body. But those who never died have seen the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9, Isaiah 63, Isaiah 60, the closing of the third age of message, the loud cry, close of probation, all the seven last plagues, and they sang the song of their experience and deliverance, which no man can learn save the 144,000. Will Sister White be with the 144,000? That's our next question. Sister White was taken in the vision unto one of the planets which had seven moons, where she met good old Enid. This place was so beautiful, and her desire for it so keen, she begged the angel to let her stay. Then the angel said, "You must go back, and if you are faithful, you, to the 144,000, shall have the privilege, okay, of visiting all the worlds and viewing the handiwork of Elohim." See early writings, page 40. There is no contradiction in this statement, for the angel told her that she, with the 144,000, means that she is one with them, but not one of them. She will doubtless be with them for she may be termed as the mother of them, being the messenger and founder of this movement. Nor can we suppose they will sing the song of Moses and he, Moses, not be there, because they are the 144,000. A special coming with a special experience is no reason why others could not travel with them, for undoubtedly Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be with them, being the fathers in the type. What objection could be made if others would journey with them? We may suppose that Yahshua would give unto all the redeemed at least one trip to the other worlds. Only 144,000 enter temple. And as we were about to enter the holy temple, Yahshua raised his lovely voice and said, only the 144,000 enter this place. And we shouted, hallelujah. This temple was supported by the seven pillars, all of the transparent gold. I sit with the pearls, the most glorious. For the wonderful things I saw there, I cannot describe. I saw there tables of stone in which the names of the 144,000 were engraved in the letters of gold. After we beheld the glory of the temple, we went out. Early Volumes, page 19. It is clear that no others were to enter the holy temple except the 144,000. And again, it is clear that she went in, for she said, for the wonderful things I there saw, I cannot describe. And after we beheld the glory of the temple, we went out. She could not see the things inside the temple unless she had gone in. And she could not have come out if she had never entered in. Some may think the sister fight is 144,000 because she entered this temple, and now that she is dead, that part of the 144,000 will be resurrected. There is no cause for the confusion here. She could have entered the temple before or after, or she could have gone right along with them, and still it would not change the thought. We must remember this is only a vision and not the real 144,000. They were not made up at that time. Neither was was she bodily there. But this vision was given for her to make a report and receive a certain truth. In other words, she was a reporter. What kind of report could have been given if she had not entered the temple? For the command, only the 144,000 enter here, had no reference unto her whether she should stay out or enter. She is one with them, but not one of them. This brings the close of our service hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. We're going to close this service now with a song. You must be born again by the light of day. In the twilight of the evening, Yahshua, he had something on his mind, something hard to define. He pondered in his heart the things he'd seen and heard, but most of all he had to hear from the living word. He said, Master, I know you're sent from heaven above, else you couldn't do the thing that you do with such love. Mankind has not witnessed such miracles here today. So tell me, Master, what must I do in order to be saved? Joshua said, you must be born again. My friend, of the water and the blood, and you from all sin, and walk in heaven's light from this morning on, my friend, and teach the world how to sing a brand new song again. In the twilight of the evening, this world is winding down. We help from everyone to spread the word around. The day is for standing. do today? My friends, what do you say? Do you need a closer walk? A hammer along the narrow way? Do you need a tender friend? Resurrection, done the dead. It's listening close to me now. But here's what Yahshua was saying. Yahshua said, you must be born again, my friend. Of the water and the blood.